Well, it gives me great pleasure to introduce the next speaker. For anyone who saw his delightful performance last night, Leonard Fall attained his honors degree in computer science at Simon Fraser University. He's the composer of the for the film The Corporation, which has become the highest grossing Canadian documentary in history. He's also Freaky DNA, which is my favorite part of him. He has performed in Vancouver, Amsterdam, Berlin, Toronto, Banff, Japan, Portugal, Germany, and the United Kingdom. He currently teaches video game audio full-time at the Vancouver Film School. And, should be on the same page, shouldn't it? This lecture is a technical study of the real-time remix project installed at the Surrey Art Gallery that makes extensive use of free software. There's more here, but I'll just give you Leonard and he'll explain it all. Well,
alrighty. So, is the microphone on or not?
Perhaps it's not.
Well, I turned down the levels because I'm sending to it. So, where's the
unfortunately, I have to mute it.
Okay, so just coming up. Okay, I'll mute it on my end then.
Yeah.
Okay.
How's that happen?
Yes, I have no idea. I'm not out there. Oh, yeah. Okay. My ears are bleeding. Basically, I'm going to try and cram in as much as I can in the next hour. I teach video game audio full time at the film school, and really, it was a great project to work with Leanne and the rest of the mentors and the crew on this project. And so, basically, sort of my part of the project was really to look at sort of the, I guess, the technical design and bring that together to make sure that it actually worked with what we wanted to do creatively. So the way that my time schedule was, a lot of the time was spent up front actually creating the software, sort of making digital sketches, little interactive sort of ideas, and then bringing that and sort of bouncing it off the other people that were working on the project. So that's one of my biggest recommendations after working in games a lot, is the idea is get the code working as quickly as you can, and then basically you're producing sort of like building blocks and really get that happening so people know what their materials are. So rather than sort of working with a technical design doc and sort of hoping that things will work 80% way through the project and then realizing that everything's all gone to hell in a handbasket because, you didn't plan on some sort of missing bit of equipment or some sort of software bug or crash sort of issue, that I really tried to accelerate the process off the start of it. So, the great thing about Pure Data is just that it's a very fast sort of prototyping. I use it for prototyping. Pure Data, for those who don't know, is really similar to MaxMSP. It's written by Miller Puckett, the same guy that basically created the core of Max and MaxMSP. So Pure Data is really the open source version of that. And Miller is working hard on this program down in, I guess it's the University of San Diego. And he uses it primarily to teach his students digital audio theory. So he works within electroacoustics, and I believe his degree is in physics. So he's, when I show it to my students that are, they're hoping to work in audio post and sort of work with, mixers and stuff like that, it kind of freaks them out. So, it's kind of like I'm appropriating this, software for a use that, sometimes it feels like I'm bending it more than I need to, but it's a really great way of getting your ideas down quickly, and because it's free, you can share it easily with the people that you're working with. Whereas with Max, it's more expensive. If you're using the jitter side of it, which I was using what's called GEM, or the graphics environment for multimedia with Pure Data, that you're looking at several hundred dollars to get Max up and running. And I would say that Max is a lot nicer. It's a lot, the UI user interface is a lot, more concise. But I'd say for me, using Pure Data, that I find Pure Data a lot cleaner. My background is primarily in coding, so I really like the fact that it's very stark and ugly and black and white and runs on all sorts of systems, and it's open source, so basically Miller's, allowing everybody to look at his stuff and add to it, so it has a really great community feel to it. So If you want to learn more, just obviously search for Pure Data on the web. And there's versions for Linux. There's versions for OS X. Obviously for Windows, that's the platform that I was running it on. And I think it can basically be ported to many different systems. So there's even a person that has it running on a PDA as well. So it's a very agile system. So, I mean, that's really sort of the core of what I want to look at here. So this is the introduction. Sorry for the I have a wide screen display, and it's just easier for me to keep it at the resolution. So there's an O and then an S there, and the rest of the E does exist. So and so this project. It's one of those things that I can wave my hands and stuff like that, but it's really something that would be great if you could experience. It's at the Surrey Art Gallery right now until March?
March 12th, and if I get my way, it'll be a bit
longer. Nice. And it's been running, it opened in October, is that right? Yeah.
Some of it is DVD run, and we consider that disposable, but the computers are fine.
Yeah, it's been doing really well. So that's another thing is that Pure Data is, it's usable in real time. I mean, I've got a lot of data going through this system. So as far as the actual sort of experience itself, we have had photos taken of it, and I was looking for those. But primarily, the idea is to introduce this notion of screen-based art. So there's these very large 40-inch panels, LCD displays. There's two of them. One's oriented vertically. The other one is sort of horizontally. And so you experience it. It's at eye level. Plus, there's a smaller display, which is actually outputting the real-time video motion capture data. Like, there's an overhead webcam that looks at the people as they sort of approach the exhibit. It's sort of hard to explain with so basically the idea is you move around, the images change, the audio changes. So that's sort of the overall picture, and then we'll look at sort of the details as they sort of come up. So say on one of the screens you would see, you know, sort of something like this. Of course it would be moving. So there's different layers, and this is the Flash, the visual based layer. It's running on two separate machines because Flash is sort of, you know, it just visuals require a lot of horsepower. And then the PD system is on a separate computer, which is outputting real-time data to those two systems. So the neat thing about the screens is that they will randomize to different images, but they will be getting their source, the motion data, from the same source. So depending on how the music changes, they'll both be reacting to that, but they'll be crawling through different sets of data at the same time. So there's this really nice conversation that happens between the two. So unfortunately, I can't demo that, but I can, as best as I can, show you how it runs on my laptop, and it's going to be a little hairy because trying to run all the server side, the PD sort of motion stuff, plus the visuals, it, you know, with those that have worked with Flash, Flash is a little bit of a pig. So plus Pure Data can sort of peak up pretty high too. So we'll see how it goes. So it'll be, I actually have it running in the background, it hasn't died yet, so we'll see what's happening. Okay, so here's another picture. So you can see what happens here is that the gallery did is to basically put out a call for digital media. So that's primarily photographs. We also got some videos, some animations. And then we also had some interns, like youth media, go out and collect sound from the Surrey community. So the real idea is to basically show how accessible technology is, and that the youth are already using it, and really reflect that to the community, the people that visit the gallery. So really the idea is to be very inclusive and hopefully honestly project what's actually happening in Surrey and what makes it unique. And for me, being in Vancouver, it's, you know, Surrey is not that far away, but definitely there are things that are quite different and quite unique about Surrey that I learned a lot about on this project. So With this, you can see that, you know, we've got the digital photograph. There's multiple layers that are happening. So we've got these pieces of text that are moving. And one of the great things that we sort of, over the, you know, the many month project of sort of figuring out what our design was going to be, was that the way in which it moves through the images are actually done by categories. So it sort of crawls between certain similar categories. So it really gives this notion of there's a coherency, like I guess you'd say sort of a subject, where it'll go from, say, it'll be, you know, a subject to, say, like homelessness, and then it'll go to lonely, and then it'll go to community, and then it'll go to, you know, like whatever, sort of like recreation or something like that. It'll worm through this network of interrelated nodes, and to watch it, it's quite interesting. I will demo it, so we'll have a look at that. So this is sort of the overview of the way that I've let's see here. Maybe I can try and, can I get the other side of the screen here? No, it's not going to do it here. I guess I could, what I'll do is I'll actually exit this mode and then we'll be able to see it. Okay. So you get to see my naked PowerPoint, but whatever. The idea is to get the information. So, here, extensive use of free software. So we used tools like Audacity. We also used OpenOffice for documentation. GhostGum for reading PDF files, using PNG files, all this kind of stuff. But primarily it was centered around Pure Data. So the idea was to really keep the costs low as far as the software. So even though we had the guy that was delivering the music, he was sort of considering maybe we could get Reason, you know, in-house. But as far as I know, we didn't pay anything on the audio side. I don't think we bought a single piece of software. So, I mean, this is the way that I work. Like, with my students, I want them to be able to take their projects home, right? And Pure Data is great for that because they can run it on their PC or their Mac, and it's cross-platform, so you can load the patches in. And in general, there's not too much of an issue with that. So the project itself, yeah, we've got real-time audio remixing. So what happened was that the guy that was delivering the music, Ender, he's a great musician, and he had pre-existing tracks that within the engine, we cut up his music into various intensity levels. And this is really similar to the way that it works in games. So he would take a two or four bar phrase, and then if there was an intro section, that would be sort of like, you know, that would be low intensity. And if there was sort of, you know, music starting to get going, that would be the medium sort of intensity. And then the high intensity would be where you've got all the drums and everything like that, sort of, you know, 2:30 in the morning kind of music. So what we did is basically sliced all of this stuff up, and when you move through the space, it creates, basically analyzes how much motion there is, where it is, and it will actually change the music. It'll basically put the intensity level up depending on how much motion there is. So hopefully this camera will be able to show you that. So that's the adaptive music. The beat detection is very simple. All I did was just do low-pass kind of filtering on the kick. And because he was using a program, Reason, that, you know, there's various, you know, it's kind of a lot of techno stuff, but it was actually pretty easy to pull out the kick drum just, you know, using a spectrum. So with that, I just did thresholding. And so what we do with the with that information is that the kick drum actually will push the flash to the next image. So the more kick drums there are, the faster the images come. So it gives you this idea of pace with the music. So we've got sound effects as well. So there was roughly 250 different clips that were primarily, I guess it was one of the interns that did that. We had a little bit of pre-existing stuff, but she basically just, you know, did interviews, and she cut those out super small. And so what happens is that to sync those up with the music, they actually get started at each of these phrases because we know when the musical phrases will start. And then I did various processing on that to keep it interesting. So it doesn't just go like, there's a sample. One of my, you know, musical interests is dub. So what I did is I basically did some dub style stuff with the text so that it sounds like it's actually integrated within the music. So I've got, you know, basically I can warp the pitch. There's a delay effect. And it allows you to hear the phrase more than once as well, because sometimes it gets obscured by the music. But the idea is to really fuse the content that we got directly from the environment with the music. Okay? We've got, like I said, motion detection, distributing load, because there's a lot of stuff going on the motion detection side, and then the visuals. So there's basically three computers all running together. And we've got the communication via XML, and this is just an object that you get with PD. It communicates with Flash, and it works really quite well. And then, like, you know, there's the open source stuff. And let's see here. I think I've just got another image here. So here's another image. You can see, you know, and these are pictures taken by youth. So they basically take pictures of things that they're interested in. And so you can see it's a sort of cool shot, you know, guy on his bike. And the way that the text works is that the text is like a layer mask. So it's not only giving sort of, you know, sort of context and sort of a concrete kind of, you know, framing for the piece, but it also is quite aesthetic as well. And Jeremy Thorpe, the programmer for the Flash side of things, he came up with this idea of rotating text, so we'll see that actually the project. So here's sort of the, you know, if we look at the just the way that sort of the flow goes between the sections, we've got the pure data side, or big green rectangle. And from there, we're getting motion sensing data, into pure data, plus it's also changing the adaptive music and also the samples. The audio is, like, you know, we've got beat detection, so it's talking to the pure data side. We've got a connection between Flash and also PD. So there's ways of having us on the Flash side. We were possibly going to put it over the net so people could actually run the server remotely and also have communication with that. So because we had the motion detection data, but we could also just as easily get data from the web. But it was primarily a security issue of allowing open access to the city network, which is not a good thing. So there are ways around that. But that's the reason why there's two-way communication there. And then with the Flash, we've got images being played, and then also video as well. Well, I already went over the audio section. So, yeah, here's another picture. And so there's a lot of construction in Surrey, so it's interesting that pictures like this are taken. You can see, you know, there was two interns that were hired for, was it 2 months or 3 months? Kind of.
Two for two.
Yeah. Right. There was a project coordinator, and she did a great job. That was Fiona, and then the two interns, which were sort of more involved in the creative side, working day-to-day with the images. And also, they were the ones that did the text. So they were tagging the images and adding sort of little contextual phrases to it. So they've got, you know, join the revolution. And you can see there the ones, the colored tags are basically the sort of like subject headings. So you can see industrial there as well. And it's chaining between these two topics, industrial and revolution, which is interesting. And then there's little small fragments like, you know, have we lost and stuff that are, it's quite interesting to watch it when it's running. And then this one, I had to put this in. My car was stolen, but of course in Vancouver. But this is, you know, something that, you know, the sort of, you know, the volunteers would have a look at this sort of this issue. But you can see with the overlaid text, we've got, you know, like fast and lost, and these kind of tags would be added to this kind of image. So it's neat to see sort of how these layers come together. Okay, so that's kind of the presentation side of things. And okay, I don't need this anymore. I'll quickly. That's additional information. With this, I talked to the interns about how to work with Pure Data a little bit, but really they used it as an application. So I was the one that was primarily the technical director and making sure that they understood how it worked, but they didn't have to change the actual structure itself. But the idea is that if they wanted something to change, then they would, you know, ask for changes, and then I'd try and make that happen. So it was really sort of like I was working in very much a sort of technical support role, but also, you know, I had certain ideas that I wanted to, you know, to have happen with the primarily the audio side of things. Okay. So I can just breeze through these ones here. So yes, I've gone through this. Adapts to motion sensing. We've got multiple songs. I think there's about six songs or so. Tempo synced effects like this. The sound samples are synchronized. Real-time motion detection. There's like the object is a centroid motion detection, which is very simple, but it also makes it very fast. So basically what it does is it takes the pixels of successive frames and it figures out the centroid, like the weighting of that. And so from there I can generate sort of, you know, second layer data like velocity or acceleration from that. So basically you get an X, Y, and a size of where the motion is. So it's very simple, but it's quite effective. So basically it can only really track one object. And we've got multiple camera inputs, so this was kind of neat. Simon, who's another of the mentors, Henry is the other one, including myself, that he wanted to have this idea of, you know, that the security cameras now is somewhat problematic, but the software will take in multiple camera input where if it sort of deems one camera as being boring, in other words, there's no motion going on, then it'll actually switch to the next camera. So there is a camera overhead, basically pointed at the receptionist. So we've got reception there, and they're sort of tracked. Plus, there was another camera that was oriented towards if people are walking past. There's also a sort of traditional-ish kind of like, you know, frame photographs as well that accompany this. So when people are moving through that exhibit, they're also tracked as well. And then, but the main one was an overhead camera that would detect motion. So it switched between those. And see, I've got the communication web possibilities. That's something we haven't done yet. That's sort of like a feature drop. So it's not too difficult to implement that. Like I said, Audacity, you know, I was using FileZilla for FTP server and client, Firefox, web browser, probably, you know, most people use these things anyways. And then also Type VNC. I've actually switched to Ultra VNC for doing virtual network stuff. So basically, the remote desktop pops up. If I wanted to, I could visit my desktop at home really easily. So this was great for me to really get a lot of work done because I live in Vancouver, which is, you know, basically takes me about 40 minutes to get out to Surrey. So I could actually just remote log into that computer and change stuff right away, which was working really well. And of course, once the computers were embalmed in the walls for the exhibit and also, you know, put in the ceiling, that the process became a lot more difficult. So I'd actually have to go out there and sit with a little, you know, remote keyboard and sit there. So and then of course, yeah, I'm using like OpenOffice and stuff like that. So, you know, that's, I try to use the free stuff that works. So if you don't know these programs, you might want to check them out, you know, on your own time, or you can ask me about them as well. Okay. And I guess what I'll do to get things moving along is just move to the project here. So you see right now we've got motion detection happening. If I switch this over, you know, if, let's see here.
Wave your arms.
Yes. Okay, let's see. There we go. All right. And what's happening as well is that if I bring up the music bubble a bit, you see that it's, that's better? Okay. There we go, that's as fine as it is. Okay, so what's happening right now is the kick drums are generating the white flashes, and this is just a visual thing so that I can see when it's being triggered. The box there is, of course, detecting motion, right? So, what else we got? Oh, there's also there's two bars there. One of them is average motion, and the other one is basically instantaneous motion. So what I do is it's sort of like it's like a peak level that I ride. So you can hear this is Ender's music, and it's responding to, you know, basically the real-time input that it's getting. So you can see my patches are quite beautiful. They're works of abstract art.
Ooh, look at that one.
Oh, yeah. No, it just gets better. Okay. So basically, this is sort of the main page. So you can see in the top right corner there's three green boxes which show the intensity. It says low, medium, and high. I can select, different camera inputs and sensitivity and whatnot. So, let's see here, if I move around here, try and get it somewhat of a neutral background. Okay, so, let's go like this. So it's picking the flash up from the screen as well. So if I go like, and it's out of focus. And if I go over here, all right. So, and it's also low light as well. So it's having a hard time actually figuring out. So
are we having the light up there?
Yeah, we could try.
Get a little bit more contrast happening.
Maybe wear some white or something like that.
All right.
So yeah, there we go. So you can see that it is. It's not bad. There's also seemingly a fair bit of noise in the camera too. So
there we go.
Yeah. So it actually does a fairly good job. Like, and it's you basically have to get the lighting down, right?
Yeah.
So the more I move, you can see that the intensity has now moved up to high, right? So what's actually happened is that the music right now is at medium intensity, and then if I try and like move around, you can see the bars are going crazy. So it's funny to watch kids with this, because they'll just freak out and watch the screen, and primarily they just want to see themselves. But the more they interact with it, because they can see themselves on the screen, you know, now it'll go from medium to high, hopefully. So it's going to go... Okay, right. There, see, now it's intensity high, right? So the music is switched to a higher intensity. And then if I move out of the screen, then hopefully it'll drop, like the red threshold is the average, and then we've got the other one there, which is the instantaneous. And what'll happen eventually is that it's gone to medium, now it's gone to low. So what'll happen is that the music on the next transition will switch to low intensity. So when we hit a section of the music, see, now it's low, right? So basically the music dynamically responds to the environment, which is, it's neat to see people react to it, because it works with people of all ages. It's fun to watch, like, you know, the kids going at it. And, like, the fun thing is that we put this screen here, and I don't know if it was more accident than design, but it was put lower. So basically it was just showing sort of the gem window, like the motion detection window. And it was put at a kid height, and the kids just love it. Like, they just attack the screen. So, and then also, yeah, it's fun to watch. We had the tech people, like the IT people, come through, and it was funny to watch them move through, because they're all slow, and then, you know, then their coworkers leave, and then they start, like, moving around. it's funny to watch people, So, there we go. Okay, so, I'll get a little bit of feedback here, but, yeah. So that's that with the motion detection, and I'll try to screen through some of the patches here.
All right, if I put it here, I won't get.
Then
I can still
do that. Okay, so as far as the patch breakdown, where to begin? Okay, so here we go. This is a nice patch. All right. There will be a quiz later. All right. So. I'll try and break this out here. So you can see, in the industry, this is known as alpha. But this is running, and it's been running at 24/7. Besides one hiccup that we had, was it was periodically having difficulties, and what was happening is that the processor was actually peaking out, and it would choke the audio. Everything else would continue, but it would choke the audio stream so much with the load that I basically had to reduce the analysis rate for the number of frames analyzed for the motion data. Once I did that, it's been running fine as far as I know. It's super solid. So, you know, like, you know, the idea of prototyping, this is very much prototype code, and I haven't cleaned it up, but, you know, I do know what it does. And, kind of. So you can see there's all different elements here. We've got the motion detection happening. I've also got the possibility of just playing canned video. So if I switch this over to here, hopefully we won't crash. So this is video that we took from the gallery space. And this is kind of what the camera sees. And so what we did is basically use this as sort of, I guess you'd say, it's sort of placeholder stuff. So you can see the people involved in the project. There's Henry looking at the camera. There's myself. Obviously, this was during summertime, so I got my sandals on. Then there's Inder, who's the other guy in the red. He's the musician guy. And then Simon's there. So he's the other guy who's working on the project. Simon. Yeah. And yes, yeah, well, Fiona.
And Sylvia.
Sylvia was remotely involved. But she's not on the tape.
Yeah.
I'm just describing the people that are on the tape. So yes, there's many, many people involved. Like, we had lots of youth volunteers. We had, yeah, Fiona working, like all the time on it, yourself. And then also, I guess there's also other people like, the support staff and whatnot. So there were a lot of people that were involved with this project. So this here just outlines the sort of video side of things. So the primary, for those that are working with PD, the real sort of core of this is this here. And it says PIX Blob. And that's really where the centroid detection is happening. And so this is an extension, GEM, graphics environment for multimedia. So it's right here. It's hard to read, but it's going there. And then a lot of the little numbers and stuff are tuning to try and make it so that the slews between the, so that it actually will track my hand properly instead of jittering around everywhere. And then similarly, if you've got a fast amount of motion, then it actually responds somewhat intelligently-ish. So it's a little bit of, lots of fussing to get it so that it actually looks like it should be doing what it's doing. So there's one part of it. And then sort of a prettier part that I had pre-existing is the adaptive music engine. So that is... Where did I hide that one? Okay. I've got that. Where did I put it? So I've actually renamed this guy. Okay. So I'll try to find that section later. This section here really works with the Flash interface side of it. So this is the main object here. It says Flash server. I realize it's hard to read. But that's the one that's basically taking all the data that I'm sending from PD and then sending it out to the visual side of it. And so I'll boot that section up in a bit, and then we can see how the graphics respond, although they won't be in sync because my machine's going to be tooling. That, it'll just be choking. We'll see the CPU graph, and it'll just be maxed. Fan will be going. And then there's other areas down here, like it says testing. This is stuff that we were getting from the actual Flash client itself. You can attach an arbitrary number of clients to this. So although we have two, we could have like 200 different clients all running separate versions of this. So basically, this is kind of a broadcast kind of network protocol, primarily because we're not getting a lot of data back from the Flash stuff. But that was kind of an idea, is that if we had this sort of light client that people could actually download this, instead of just getting data from the motion sensing, we could actually have people like scratching an XY pad or something like that, and then being able to interact with the exhibit at home. So that's something that is sort of a future possibility. So let's see here. I'm wondering where I hid the adaptive music part of this. It's been a while since I looked at this. Here's a great section. So here's the section that the interns, this is how the different subjects are connected. So you see that it was neat because they actually sort of subverted the use of pure data as a mind map or a memory, like a memory kind of web thing, an organizational tool. So what I did, and this is something that's not actually sort of implemented in the actual exhibit, is that one of the things we were thinking of is, getting data back from the Flash server, and then that way we would know where it's actually crawling between, and then we can have a separate screen, a pure data screen, that was actually sort of showing the which section it's currently in. So here, you know, we've got direction, and then, you know, maybe it's going here, you know, that those two aren't, you know, and then it would move from red down to sign, right? So the flash clients is doing this all the time, and it's spinning out those colored subject headings, right? So when we look at that, you'll see that this is really how it's put together, and it's neat to see how it sort of worms between the different sections. Here is the section of code that does the speech. So basically, it's new music sections. It spits out a new chunk of speech. One of the interesting things is that you can do with PD, and I assume you can do it with Max as well, is dynamic programming. So what happens is that at runtime, it'll actually go to the directory and make new objects based on the data in that directory. So here, this is where I actually, at runtime, this patch is actually empty when I first load it up, and then it'll actually worm through all these and create tables of all the data. Because sometimes it's difficult to read stuff in off the disk, so I try and load everything into RAM. Because this is we have enough RAM, and it's not like we're working with video games that have, you know, whatever, 32 megs. So the idea is to make it so that the system isn't working too hard and put everything into RAM. So that was the idea there. What else can I show? So there's many different patches and sub-patches. And really, this stuff was really quite fast to produce. There's a possibility for, we only had it in stereo, but Pure Data can actually output, you know, if you wanted to, 16-channel audio, no problem. So it's just basically you just add audio outputs and it's totally seamless. So with this, with my class, I work in surround, so I usually have 6 outputs, whereas with this project, you know, you can see there's music, you know, LF, which would be the sub and stuff like that, and you can discreetly send to those channels. So I think probably what I should do is move to the section that the flash side of things here. Okay. So here's a little bit of the so here's the music, and like I said, we'll see if this crashes and burns or not. They're not meant to be run on the same machine. So hopefully this works. Okay. Yes. Sounds great. Yeah. Okay. So. Here's what you would see on one of the screens. Okay. All right. So you can see we've got different languages as well to represent, you know, basically the people that actually live in Surrey. It's supposed to be about the population and about the actual area in which it's representing its geographic and, you know, social location. So I'll see what I can do as well. So I'll try and bring up the, I'll bring up a little bit of this so that we can see sort of what intensity level we're at. Okay. So, right now we're at high because I've got the camera switched over to this guy. I'm going to change it back to camera input. Okay. Okay, and now if I switch over here, you know, we can see all these things are happening, you know, at the same time, basically. So now we're at low intensity, so that basically the visuals should slow down, the music should sort of, you know, go to a lower intensity as well. Maybe what I'll do is make the graphic screen actually a little bit smaller, and we can try and see these happening at the same time. Okay. All right. Arkansas, you know, it's going very slowly through the images right now as the, you know, the intensity is low. There's that. So if I move around a lot, you know, and it actually it switches between tones as well. So if I keep the intensity high, let's see what happens. You see that? All that stuff's happening in the background. And let's have a look at the... So, like I said, in our actual... in the gallery, what's happening is that there's two screens like this. Okay? What I'll do is I'll leave it there, a little bit sort of running, turn the music down, and I'll just take questions then. Is that okay?
Yeah,
a little bit of time? Okay, great. All right, yes.
So, why did you choose to use glass for the graphic department? It's one of the two our things in the gym, right?
Yeah, but I didn't want to do it.
Okay.
I mean, that's the short answer, but. I think a lot of it had to do with aesthetic, that flash, it's sort of, I think more so, what originally the idea was to have the interns actually do the flash side so that we could actually give them stuff to do programming-wise, but the people that we were working with were just more visually oriented, and so we actually found someone to do all the flash coding. So that was the primary reason, to make it a little bit more open, say, than... you know, whatever, myself working within GEM, because yes, you can do all this stuff in Pure Data, and you know, you can get all the blends and stuff happening, but there's a certain aesthetic, I guess, that's sort of timely to Flash right now that I think sort of adds to it. So it restricts you in some ways, and it also makes things, you know, certain things are easier. It has its own, you know, feel to it. You know, Flash has a certain texture about it.
It looks very graffiti, too. So
yeah. Yeah. So that's we're looking at a way to make it so that we can have, you know, basically really nice graphics that were very fast to make. And you know, I sort of looked at the possibility of GEM, and I was kind of like, no. Then the problem is that I'll get sucked into that. So I basically said I was basically producing a firewall between myself and the visual side of things. So it was good to put it into a different language, because I don't know Flash. It's not my thing. Yeah. Other questions? Yes? It was primarily a manual process. So really, we went around sort of, you know, to high schools and stuff and got CDs, and then that was, you know, the sort of project coordinator that was putting a lot of that together, sort of, you know, bringing the all the digital photos in. We had, was it 600 or it's a lot? Yeah. Yeah, it was all from, you know, youth in the community. That was the real focus, to make it so that they could see, you know, they could share, you know, with their friends, and also, you know, basically show what, you know, kids are doing these days with digital photos and digital media in general.